All right, we're going to start in the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Tet Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, Mishayu Perotav Bi'ir Acheret. His Perot were in a different city where he can't reach on Shabbat Yom Tov. Vervu Bnei Oto Ayir. The Vi Etzlomi Perotav. And the people in that city made an Eruv so that they could reach him and bring his Perot to him. Lo Yavulo. They cannot bring it to him because the Perot have a din like the Baalim. And since they were not overlapped, their locations were not overlapped before Shabbat, before Yom Tov, they cannot bring the Perot to him. Because he and his Perot are not in the same area. He was not able to access his Perot, they can't bring it to him. V'im irevhu Perotav kamohu. If he made the Eruv, not them, but he made the Eruv, then his Perot have the same din like him. Mishi zimein etzlo orchim. Person who invited over guests. Lo yalichu biadam manot. They can't pocket the food and take it home with them, because when they came, they made an Eruv to come there to spend the time, but coming into Yom Tov, there was no intent that they take their food back, because that's the food of the Baal HaBayit, and the Baal HaBayit cannot reach to where they're going back to, because he doesn't have the Eruv. So if they take the food has the din like the Baal HaBayit or the host, they have an Eruv, they're going to go back to a place where the Baal HaBayit couldn't have reached, and the food can't go back there. Ela im kein zika lehem manoteem erev Yom Tov. Unless he is mezakeh them, he gives over to through a third party, gives them zchut, he gives them ownership inside of the food coming into Yom Tov, because then it's theirs. Now Tosafot asked the question we saw before with regards to Shoel, that when you buy something or borrow something, even though you don't take possession of it until Yom Tov, as long as coming into Yom Tov the intent was that you would take it, then that's enough. So why don't we say the same thing over here? Why does he have to do a formal kinyan with a third party to grant them the food? Why don't you just say he intends to give them the food on Yom Tov? That's enough to put it into their possession. Whatever they don't eat, they can take home with them. The Tosafot says that it must be v'yesh lamar d'shoel d'atei tfei akli miyochim almanot. It must be that a shoel, a borrower, who intends to borrow a kli, he knows he's going to get it, and he's focused on it, and he takes possession in his mind of the kli, even though he doesn't have physical possession of it. Guests, when they're coming, they're not thinking about the food that's coming up, the leftovers, how they're going to take them home. So in that case, the guests don't intend, or they don't have in mind that they're going to take possession of it. They think they're coming over to eat. And so therefore, without a formal kinyan here, it doesn't change over into their possession because they didn't have their dot on the food coming into Yom Tov. Itmar, hamafkid perot etzel chaviro. Person who deposits perot with his friend to watch. Rav Amar kiraglei mishiv kido etzlo. It has the din like the shomer, whoever's watching them. The fruit take on the properties of that individual. Shmor amar kiraglei mafkid. It goes like the depositor. So there's a question not of ownership. It's clear the owner of the fruits is the depositor. It's a question now, where we've said this before, with regards to tchumin and these issues. It's not an issue of formal kinyan. It's a question of who has their mind on the fruits, who's thinking about these items, because it's in their purview going into Yom Tov. The owner might not be thinking about it because even though he deposited, he put it out of his mind. The one who is watching it might have much more intent for it, even though it's not his, but because he's responsible for it. So that's the question of that tension here between ownership and the one who is responsible, the responsibility over here. So Lema Rabbi Shmuel da'azdu tamayu. Let us say Rabbi Shmuel argue here in a halachic argument that they have somewhere else, which is the Tanan. Imichnis bishut balachatzer chayav. Rabbi Omer, the olam enu chayav achikabel alav bala bayit lishmor. So here's a sugyu in Baba Kama, where you ask permission to put your behemoth into someone else's courtyard, or into their field. Say, listen, can I put my cow, or my ox, into your field? Guy says, sure, come on, bring it in. When he says, sure, come along, bring it in, what does that mean? Does that mean, bring it in, and you're on your own? I'm not taking responsibility for it, but, you know, you have permission to come here and utilize the space, and to graze and do whatever you want, but you're responsible. You do it on your own. You know those signs say, like, at your own risk. So you do it at your own risk. Or do we say, when you say, he says, bring it in, that means that he is saying, not bring it in, I'm going to take care of it. It's in my possession now. I will take care of it. So that happens to be a machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi. The Chachamim say that Mechnish Bishur Balachatzir Chayav. The Balachatzir now takes full responsibility, culpability for the animal. When he says, bring it in, he means, bring it in, I'm going to take care of it, I'm going to watch it. On the other hand, Rabbi says, until you explicitly say that I take responsibility for it, That's not taking responsibility. Giving permission to come is different than accepting responsibility. The default is not the acceptance of responsibility unless it's articulated. So, v'amar Rav Huna amar Rav, halacha k'divrei chachamim. The halacha is like the chachamim, u'shmol amar halacha k'rabi. The halacha is like Rabbi. So, leima Rav damar k'rabbanon. Let us say Rav says the same thing over here, like he passes halacha like the Rabbanon over there, which is, since you deposit or you are given permission to put your animal into this field, it's as if automatically he accepts achrayut, responsibility for it. So too we'll say over here, with regards to the fruits or the items that he has deposited with the shomer, his intent is that they are within the world of the shomer, not in his world, because he relinquishes control in a sense to him. Shmuel d'amar k'rabi, Shmuel says that by default, we don't say there's automatic responsibility. He'll say over here, like Rabbi, and therefore he'll extrapolate that to us, that it stays within the world of the mafkid, of the depositor, and doesn't go over to the recipient. So Amar lecha Rav, it's pretty obvious why you can break this down or change this. Part of what Shaul just asked here, which is when you articulate, or when it's clear what the relationship is, then it's different than our case, which is the default scenario where we don't say anything, and then we want to know what happened. Here, Amar lecha Rav, Anan damar filu l'Rabbi, I can even hold like Rabbi. Ad kan lo kama Rabbi haltam elo bistama. Over there, it was nothing said. It was just, bring it in. Lo kabel alei nitiruta. Over there, he's not accepting achrayut. Aval hocha hakabel alei nitiruta. Over here, there's a relationship of a mafkid and nifkad. It's clear that he deposited with him to watch it. So over there, Rabbi's going to agree that it's something that has a deeper connection to the party that accepted it, to the person that's watching it, because there was a stipulation that he is watching it. I can even fit into the position of the Rabbanon. Over there, the depositor has a benefit by having the recipient take responsibility. By the shore, which can damage and do things that are untoward, he wants the recipient or the person who's given permission to go there to take responsibility, because that really helps him out. Because if it does damage or something goes wrong, he won't have to be culpable for it. Over here, what benefit does he have that his friend has possession of the fruits? The fruits aren't walking around and doing damage. Responsibility he wants the recipient to take is somebody to watch them. But he doesn't want him to take possession of them in a sense of full-fledged responsibility in that way. Whereas by the shore, there's an additional aspect of the shore can do damage. And therefore, he really wants the other guy to take possession of him. And therefore, he's more likely to relinquish control over to the other individual to get that protection. So therefore, the depositor feels that he wants to really relinquish control. But over here, maybe the Rabbanon is saying he didn't really want to relinquish control. There's no reason for him to relinquish control. He gets no benefit out of that. So now, Tznan, our Mishnah, v'im irav hu perotov kemohu, if he makes an eruv, then his perot are like him. V'amart k'raglei mishiv kido etzlo, if you see that the fruits, like Rav says, take on the properties of the individual who is watching them, ki irav hu mayhavi. When he makes an eruv, why does that change the dynamic at all? Meaning that if you say that the depositor has no connection to his fruits anymore when it comes to Shabbat, it's whoever is there with that has the connection, like Rav says, then making a roof for the depositor shouldn't change any of that dynamic. So Amar Rav Huna, Amrei Bei Rav, Kagon, Sheichado, Keren Zavit. So Rav Huna says, in the Beit Midrash of Rav, says exactly what Fred was suggesting before, Ichado, Keren Zavit. He gave him a specific corner to put it in. We had this in Pesachim. Also, with regards to how much is something in your possession or not when it's deposited with you. For instance, the chametz of an achri, whether you accept responsibility, don't accept responsibility, but one of those items is ichado keren zavit. He designated for him his own place. By designating his own place there, that indicates a certain level of connection with the item. So in Pesach, in the reverse, when you are miyached a place for the Nachri's chametz, that might leave it in the possession of the Nachri rather than pass it into your possession. And as Rashi says over here, that's because the ushle beita. It's as if he lent you his house. When he designates a corner and says, this is where your fruits are going to go, it's as if he lent him that space in the house so that your fruits stay in your possession because they're in a place that's borrowed basically in your control still. So you maintain ownership and control, in a sense, in that way. And that's why you have the ability to go make an Eruv and go over there. We modify what Rav says now, which is that when he's Yichad Oker and Zavit, then for sure it remains with the Mafkid. Whereas when it's without Yichad Oker and Zavit, then we're back to the original stance, which is then it's the person who is watching it, the Shomer's, in terms of Eruv. So Tashma, Mish Zimein Itzlo Orchim, Lo Yolichu B'Yadam Manot. They can't take the leftovers home with them. Elaim Kein Zika Lehem, Manotehem Erev Yom Tov. Unless he granted them ownership, he gave them a Kinyan before Yom Tov threw a third party. V'Amar Karagle Mishif Kido Itzlo. If you say that they become like the one who's deposited with, Kizika Lahem, Ayadeh Acher, Mayhavi. Why does it help them? According to Rav, who says that when you have items deposited, it goes like the Shomer, not like the depositor. So over here, he granted them ownership, Erev Yom Tov, in the food. The food that they're going to eat, it's theirs. But where's the food right now? The food is with him. So that's the equivalent of them depositing their food with him. They deposit their food with him, according to Rav, then it takes on the Tom of the host, not of the guest, even though the guests own the food. It doesn't help you that ownership is not enough over here. Right. So Tosfot asks your question. If you look at Tosfot, he asks the question. He says that, Tosfot asks your question and says that you could be medayik it out of the resha, but they took the safer way. You can ask it directly rather than make it out of a deal. So you're right. They could have asked the question from there. But the answer is the same as we gave for the second part of the Mishnah, which is Ichado Keren Zavit. Now over here, what are we going to do about the latter half of the Mishnah, which is this issue of the guests? Why does giving them ownership over the food help you at all? Because it's still with the Shomer, or with the host at this point in time. Where it says, Hachanami, Kevan Dezika Lehem Aydei Acher, Kmi Shichado Keren Zavit, Dami. If he went through all the trouble to grant them ownership in the food before Yom Tov, his whole intent is that they should be able to take it back. So that's the equivalent of him not only granting them ownership, but also the control, but he gives them a space, in a sense. It's as if he gave them a space. It's as if he set it aside for their benefit. Others say that the fact that he was mizake to them already means that he's relinquishing control, and he wants it to be theirs. So that's why we would say over there that even though it's deposited with him, he still pushed it over to their side, and that's why it belongs to the guest. Rav Chana bar Chanilai, Tala Bisra b'Ibro d'Dashu. He hung some meat by the door bolt of his host. Atal kami de Rav Huna, he went to Rav Kuna Amalei. I atalit, if you hung the meat up there, zil shakil, you can take it back with you. Vi inhu talu l'cha, but if the people of the city hung it there for you, lo tishkol, don't do it, don't take it back. This is a case where Rav Chana bar Chanilai used to come to give a shir in the city, and he made an Eruv to get over to that area, to that city. So if the meat belongs to him, and he hung it there, then when he goes to the city, he can bring it back with him, because the meat is his, and his Eruv overlapped, meaning his ability to get there overlapped with where the meat was, and he can bring it back. On the other hand, if the butchers of the city said, you know, he's coming, let's give him some meat, we always like to give him a gift or something to take back with him, then you have a problem, because the meat is in the possession of the butchers, and only once he gets there does he take it. So now he can't take it back with him, because the butchers don't have an Eruv to go back to his town. He's taking something back that belongs to the butchers, that's within the tchum of the butchers, and he's trying to take it back into his tchum. That's not permitted. That's the way, at least in the Havamina, we're reading this sock of Rav Huna. So then Gemara says, V'i'ihu tala mishakil. Even if he himself hung it up, why is it that he can take it back? Va Rav Huna talmid Rav Hava. Isn't Rav Huna talmid of Rav? Ve'amar Rav karagle mishiv gido etzlo. Over here, the meat is with the host. The meat that is hung up there is by the host's house. Even if you say it belongs to Rav Chana bar Chanilai and he hung it there, nevertheless, when he left it deposited with his host. So since he left it deposited with his host, according to Rav, that means that whose tchum is governing over here? The host's. Tchum governs, not the mafki, not the one who deposits. So how can he take it back with him? Gemara says, Shaina ibr didashra dem kemish yichado keren zavit, dami. That the hanging on the door bolt is a unique location. It's the equivalent as if the host granted him a space where he can keep his meat. And so because of that, it's as if he designated his space, like we said before. And even Rav, in that case, will agree that the mafki, the depositor, keeps control and the connection in terms of tchum. Now the Gemara says, we're going to have a series of three questions that challenge this whole understanding of the story, and therefore the Gemara is going to change the whole understanding. So Amar Leih Ravilo de Ravashi, V'inu talulei lo shakyo? Is it really true, if they hang up the meat for him, that he can't take it back with him? V'amar Shmuel, shor shel patam, harihu karagle kol adam. We had before earlier that Shmuel says that if you have a shor that's being fattened up to be sold to people, then whoever buys it on Yom Tov can take it wherever they want, because the person who is selling them has in mind that whoever takes it will be like their tchum. He doesn't maintain tchum or ownership in that way over it, because he knows he's going to sell it, and he has no idea where the buyers come. He has buyers that come from outside the city, he has buyers come from anywhere, and therefore whoever buys it takes it with them, and it becomes like their tchum. As opposed to, as Shmuel says over there, shor shel roeh. The shor shel roeh is governed by the city, because the roeh's interaction is only with the people of that city. So if someone comes and takes or buys an animal from the roeh, it's limited to the tchum of that city, because his intent coming into Yom Tov was to give it to one of the Bnei Ha'ir, because that's who he interacts with. So now, if you say the same thing over here, the butchers, or the people that granted him the meat, they assume whoever comes to buy meat, they're going to sell it to. They don't have anybody in particular in mind. And that means, even if they gave it to him, they're putting it into his possession with the assumption that when he takes it, it becomes like his tchum. They're going to grant him full ability to take it, just like the shor shel patam. The patam expects to sell the meat or give up the meat to a buyer, and whoever the buyer is, he grants him the right to the tchum. Either way, they have no intent to keep it for themselves. They don't intend that it be in their tchum. And same with these butchers. When they do the meat, they're either giving it to him, they're going to sell it to him, they're going to do something with it, but they don't intend to keep it. They're not going to keep it for themselves. No, the meat's not making his eruv. The meat is just there. But he made an eruv somewhere else. He made a shvita somewhere else, and he can get to the meat. That's the question. Can he access the meat? He could get to the location without the meat being there. The question is, can he take the meat back with him? Because the tchum of the butchers ends before he goes back home. So that's the question here. Whose tchum is governing over here? So Rav Hillel says this should be no different than shor shel patam, and Rav Chana bar Chanilai's tchum should be governing over here. Amalei Ravina the Ravashi, V'inu talulei lo shakil. Again, if they put it there for him, why shouldn't he take it? V'amar Rabba Barchana Rabbi Yochana lo chuk Rabbi Dosa. The loch is like Rabbi Dosa. We saw that back on Lamed Chedem Aleph, that there's a machloka there between Rabbi Dosa, or at least between the Braitot. And over there, Rabbi Dosa says two things. He says, number one, that if you grant ownership before Yom Tov, even though you don't take possession of it until in Yom Tov, it goes by your tchum. That's one. The second thing he says is that if there's only one roeh in the city, then everybody grants their rights over to that roeh. So then if there's a buyer and seller according to Rashi, everybody knows that it's going to be with the roeh, and it's not a problem, because it assumes the tchum of the roeh, because that's where everybody's going to deposit. That's where everybody's relationship is with the roeh. So over here also, you can say one of two things when he says, Alaka Rabbi Dosa, Rashi says that, well, they know that Rav Chana bar Chanilai is coming, and they expect to give it to him. So therefore, it should be his. He can take it wherever he wants. Their intent is to grant him ownership, that he should take it wherever he wants. Just like in the cities, or the buyers and sellers, they grant it to the Roeh, because he's the only Roeh in town. So they grant their ownership or tchum to him, because they want their animals with the Roeh. Over here, they want their meat to go with Rav Chana bar Chanilai, and therefore they grant him that ability. You could say that. Or possibility is that they hung the meat there before Yom Tov to grant him that right. Even though he didn't come to pick up the meat until Yom Tov itself, it doesn't matter, because they put it there before Yom Tov and it's his. So either way, he should be able to take it back with him. Now the third question. Those were posed to Rav Ashi. And here we have a question from Rav Ashi himself. I'm Le Rav Ashi, Le Rav Kano. V'inu talulei lo shakil. Is it really true? If they hang it there for him, he can't take it back with him. Atznan. Habei mavek ilim karaglei abe alim. Animals and utensils have a din like Baalim. So here, he's the owner. If he's the owner, why can't he take it back with him? They granted him ownership over here. If they grant him ownership, then why can't he take it back? He is the Baalim. And Baalim get to take it wherever they go. So now, the Gemara says, that cannot be the explanation of this incident. But Rav Chana bar Chanilai and Rav Huna's psak over here, we must be discussing or dealing with a different issue. Ella, Shiny Rav Chana bar Chanilai, the Gavar Abahu. He was a great man, Vitorid Bishmate. And he was a little, I don't call it absent-minded. He was that genius professor that gets lost on his way to class. He was distracted, engrossed in his learning, and therefore he would lose connection with items. Why does that matter? V'achi kamarle. Iat talit idacha simane begavei lo mesachat datcha amine zil shaku. If you hung it there, then you know about it. You're engaged with it, and you have simanim in it, and you're not going to lose connection with it or forget about it. V'inu dalulucha. But if they placed it there for your benefit, then mesachat datcha v'lo tishkol. You're gonna have hesachadat, and you shouldn't take it back with you. Now, why? What's the problem here? So Rashi brings two explanations. The first is probably the more likely explanation here, that Rav in Chulin, we mentioned him a number of places in Shas, which is Rav believes basar shenitalei min ayin, basar that leaves a person's eye, cannot be eaten. It's no longer considered to be kosher, the meat. Unless you have a siman that allows you to know that even if it was nitalei min ayin, that it's the same meat that you had before. But basar shenitalei min ayin means something that you've lost connection with, meaning that you're not focused on it. So he says, if you hung it there, then we know you're not going to lose your focus or know about it and focus on it. Therefore, it's not basar shenitalei min ayin, and you can take it back with you. On the other hand, if they hung it there for you, because he was so engrossed in his learning, he would forget about it or not even think about it. And we basar shenitalei min ayin. Basar shenitalei min ayin, basically not kosher anymore. You don't take it back with you because you can't eat it. Right? And then Rashi says, lashon acher is muksa. That it's muksa also, which is that if he could possibly say that, if you hung it there, then you kept it in mind, and you were not mesiach dat from it, so that's why it's in your world on Yom Tov. If they hung it there from you, you might have forgotten about it, not thought about it, and it's muksa because you never intended to engage with this item, or to work with this item, or you could even argue, in the same case, by basar shenitalei min ayin. Basar shenitalei min ayin becomes muksa because it's no longer useful for you on Yom Tov, so there's no reason to take it back with you, the meat. In terms of the muksa scenario. Yeah, I think that's a less likely explanation. This is someone who's completely absent-minded. I've met people like this. They're so cerebral that even things that they do on a regular basis, they forget and they don't want to remember. All right, next Mishnah. Ein mashkin v'shochatim et amidbariot. One may not feed or shecht those that are wild animals. Basically, animals are not dependent on us for their food. You cannot feed them and you can't shecht them. Look, Marlo says it's obvious. If you can't feed them, you can't shecht them. You're allowed to feed, take care of, and shech the baitot, the domesticated animals, animals that basically are dependent on you. Eloin baitot. What's classified as a baitot? What are classified as domesticated? Halanot ba'ir. Those that stay overnight in the city. Hamid bariot, halanot ba'afar. Those are the ones that hang out in the meadows. They don't come home at night. They don't return every night. Alright, lovingly the Meymar, mashkim v'shochatin. So Gemara says, it's obvious, if you can't feed them, you can't shech them. So Gemara says, Milta gab orche kamashmalon. Can you teach us a little derech eretz? Delishke inash ve'em tov, v'hadar lishkot. A person should always give their animal to drink a lot, and then shecht it. Mishum sircha demashcho. Because of the stickiness, the adhesiveness of the skin, it's much harder to flay the animal if you don't give it to drink beforehand. If you give it a lot to drink beforehand, it flays much easier. The skin comes or peels away much easier. To take off or to flay the skins, the ease of taking off the skins is enhanced by the drinking. And that's why the Mishnah connected between Mashkim and Shochatim, even though there's no halachic ramification, because if you know you can't feed them, then you're not going to shech them. But the derech eretz mean that there's a practical ramification, which is here's a just good advice. Give them to drink before you shech them. Tarabanan, elhen midbariot, ve'elhen baitot. What are the wild and what are the domesticated animals? Midbariot, koshiot, sot, bepesach. They leave in the spring. Veroot, b'afar. They hang out in the meadows. V'nichnasot, b'rvia rishona. And at the first rain, they'll come back in. This year would have been a little early. The first rain after the spring, they would have already been back home. But in a normal year, that'll be by cheshvan. They spend the summer out in the meadows, and then when it becomes winter, they come back in because during the summer, they can find what to graze and what to eat. During the winter, it's much harder for them, so they come back in. Those are midbariot. Those are the wild animals, because they take care of themselves during the summer. In the wintertime, they can't. They come back in. Ve'eloin baitot. What are domesticated? Koshiot sovrot chutz l'tchum. They go out of the tchum to graze. Ve'lanot v'toch ha'tchum. But they, every night, they return to within the tchum in order to go to sleep. And they have a much tighter connection to the locale than those wild animals. Rabbi Omer, ve'elo baitot ein. Those are both considered to be domesticated. Elohein midbariot. What are wild animals? Those are kol shiotzot v'rot b'afar. They go out and they graze in the meadows. Ve'nichnasot liyishuv lo b'mot chamav lo b'mot gashemim. They don't come in the summer. They don't come in the winter. They never come in. They have no connection to the city. Those are wild animals. The ones that come in the wintertime, that's because they're dependent on you. So even though in the summer they're fine, the winter they come in, they're dependent on you. So that's the machloka here about what's considered to be midbariot and baitot. Now the Gemara moves into the final stage of Masechet Peitzah, and this will bring us full circle to the beginning of the Masechta, which is, Umi itle the Rabbi Muksa. Does Rabbi really hold a Muksa? Why is Rabbi talking about midbariot and baitot, which is a distinction in Muksa? Midbariot are Muksa, the baitot are not Muksa. So why is Rabbi making any comment about Muksa? Does he even hold a Muksa? Va bai mine Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi mi Rabbi. Didn't Rabbi Shimon, his son, ask Rabbi this question? Patzilei t'mara the Rabbi Shimon mahu. The patzilei t'mara, according to Rabbi Shimon, what's the din? Rabbi Shimon, we know, argues on Rabbi Yehuda regarding muksa. Rabbi Shimon says that there is no muksa, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says there is muksa. So he's asking, patzilei t'mara, according to Rabbi Shimon, what is their din? Now Rashi says, patzilei t'mara, this takes us back, a little chazar, to last Friday's daf. Those are, Rashi says, chotolot. Chotolot are these palm branch, palm leaf wrappings that they used to wrap up the unripened dates into them. Rashi said these are dates will never ripen on the tree. They used to wrap them up in these chotalot and leave them there until they heated up and they ended up ripening inside of them. The Gemara says in Shabbat, as well as the Yerushalmi, that you can rip open those chotalot on Shabbat. This is one of the pivotal items in the sugya of opening packages on Yom Tov and Shabbat, and that was in last Friday's daf, the mustaki, which is also another big piece of that puzzle. So these chotalot, Rashi says, is what we're speaking about over here. The other hand, Tosafot says he doesn't think that's right. We're definitely not talking about that, but rather we're talking about marim that will eventually ripen on the tree, but you went and prematurely picked them. And now you put them together in order to ripen them. So that's the possibility of what these patzilei t'mara are, according to Rabbi Shimon. Mahu, what's the din? Amalei, ain muksa le Rabbi Shimon. There is no muksa Rabbi Shimon. Ella, gugarot, vitzimukim, bilvad. The only muksa that he holds of are dried figs and raisins. And as Rashi explains, why is that? Sheheim mitchila ruim la'achila. You could have eaten them. When you pick the grapes, you can eat them. When you pick the figs, you could have eaten them. Ben, behu dacha utam biyadayim. And then you actually, both physically and intentionally, push them out of the world of eating by setting them out to dry. By doing that, you're taking them out of the world of food and leaving them for the long duration to dry out and then to be something else in the end. That is muksa. But in cases where they're not ra'ui to start, that's not called dichui biyadayim. So according to Rashi, who says that these were unripened dates, so therefore there was no dichui biyadayim because they were never ra'ui la'achila, that you pushed them out of your mind. So they don't have a din of muksa. Or, according to Tosafot, even though in the end these are dates that would have ripened, nevertheless, since they're not ripe right now, they're not ra'i la'achila. They're not ra'i la'achila. Putting them out to dry or cutting them up, whatever you do with them, that does not become dichui biyadayim. Because you have to be ra'ui and then pushed out in order to be dichui biyadayim. That's the only place that Rabbi Shimon believes there's muksa. So by the fact that Rabbi responds to his son about shita Rabbi Shimon, the Gemara assumes that Rabbi holds like Rabbi Shimon, there is no muksa. If that's the case, why is he talking about midbariot and baitot? So Gemara gives three answers. The case of the behemot is the equivalent of gugarot v'tzimukim. It's a little hard to say that because over here, these midbariot that don't come into the yeshuv at all, it's as if he was mekatz them, he pushed them out of his mind. But in the definition that we gave before, it had to be something that was inside and then he pushed them out. Here he's not really pushing them out. But as Rashi says, he's figuratively pushing them out of his mind because they never come in. They're out in the fields, out in the meadows, and they never come to visit him. So they're out of his purview. So even Rabbi Shimon would agree to that. The fact that the Gemara gives alternative answers shows you that they're not totally satisfied with the first answer, and you can understand why. It's true that they're out of your world because they're so far out, but you didn't push them out there, and so maybe that's why they're not satisfied with that answer. He is answering his son's question with regards to Rabbi Shimon's shita, but that doesn't mean he holds like Rabbi Shimon. He's just answering the question. He's saying it according to the sheet of the Rabbanan, which is, Tadidi ain muksa. I don't have any problem here, because I don't hold a muksa. Ela didchu, you who do hold a muksa, oduli miat, hecha di yotz ot vira ot bepesach, v'nichtes ot b'rviya rishona, the baito dain. Agree with me at least that those should be considered domesticated. Rabbule Rabbanan, lo. No, midbariot aim. Those are already midbariot. They disagree with this definition of midbariot. Alright, so with this we complete Masechet Beitzah. Now this brings us back all the way to the beginning of Masechet Beitzah because of the Rif. The Rif over here says that we paskin like our Mishnah over here, which says that midbariot are mukse. Well, that means that we hold the mukse on Yom Tov. Why do we hold there's mukse on Yom Tov? Don't we paskin like Rabbi Shimon? So the answer is, like Rav Nachman said on the first daf of the Masechta, by Shabbat, we hold like Rabbi Shimon and there's no mukse. Therefore, Rabbi was sotom ke Rabbi Shimon in Masechet Shabbat. In Masechet Yom Tov, in Masechet Beitzah, we hold like Rabbi Yehuda and Yom Tov that there is mukse, and therefore Rabbi was sotom ke Rabbi Yehuda in Masechet Beitzah, and therefore there's mukse on Yom Tov. So based on that, the Rif says, you can see throughout Masechet Beitzah, there are a lot of things here that we paskin, that there are mukse on Yom Tov, even though we paskin like Rabbi Shimon. And therefore the Rif concludes that there is mukse on Yom Tov. There is no mukse on Shabbat, based on our Gemara. And the reason being that Shabbat the Chamirei, they don't need mukse. Yom Tov the Kiyo, you need mukse to protect it. That is the Psak of the Rif. Along comes the Balamor and says, I don't know what you're talking about. How could you even say that? We just had in the Gemara before the issue of Shabbat and Yom HaKippurim. By Shabbat and Yom HaKippurim, we said you can go into the water or into the mikveh on Shabbat, because it doesn't look like you're going to the mikveh to be mitire yourself. It looks like you're going to cool yourself off. So you dip it in there to cool yourself off. Whereas it says, Tinach Shabbat, what about Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur is an Easter Rechitza. How can you say he's going into the mikveh to cool off? He's not allowed to do that on Yom Kippur. The Gemara's answer was, how could it be, Yesh Midei, the Mutter B'Shabbat, Vasur B'Yom HaKippurim? How is it possible you can have something as Mutter on Yesh Shabbat, and then would be Usur on Yom Kippur? I mean, at least in the realm of Durabanan, Yisrei Durabanan. Balaam Moore invokes the same principle here and says, how could it be that something on Shabbat would be Mutter, and it would be Asur on Yom Tov? We just had the Mishnah that said, Ein Ben Shabbat the Yom Tov. And we just had that issue with regards to all the Gzeirot Durabanan. There's no differentiation between Shabbat and Yom Tov. Based on that, if it's Mutter on Shabbat, it should be Mutter on Yom Tov. The Baal HaMor says the Rif is wrong. We pass them like Rabbi Shimon both by Gemara and Shabbat, and in the Gemara in Yom Tov, we pass them like Rabbi Shimon. Ah, what does he do with all the Mishnayot, like the Mishnah we just had about Midbariot? What does he do with all the Shtam Mishnayot in Masechet Peitzah? All these places we seem to have Mukse. So Baal HaMor comes up with a pretty ingenious differentiation. He says, listen, my principle, why I say that when it's Mutter on Shabbat, it can't be Asur on Yom Tov. So if it's Mutter on Shabbat, in Ochanami, there's no Mukse on Yom Tov. But if it's Asur on Shabbat, then there will be Mukse on Yom Tov. Now by Shabbat, things can be Asur for one of two reasons. Shabbat, they can be Asur because of Mukse. But sometimes they're Asur on Shabbat, not because they're Mukse, but because it's a problem on Melacha. So things like Shechita. Shechita is Asur on Shabbat, not because it's Mukse, but because it's Melacha of Shechita is not allowed on Shabbat. So he says when you come to Yom Tov, and you're talking about Behemot on Yom Tov, then Mukse will apply to Behemot on Yom Tov, because there is no Heter on Shabbat. It's not Mutter on Shabbat. It's not Mutter on Shabbat. You can't say, oh, since it's Mutter on Shabbat, it must be Mutter on Yom Tov. That's just not true. Shabbat, it's Asur, maybe for a different reason, but it's Asur on Shabbat. Therefore, on Yom Tov, Mukse will apply. So what he says is that which we say in the beginning of the Masechta that we pass in like Rabbi Yehuda in Yom Tov is limited to cases where it would be Asur by Shabbat. But if it was Mutter by Shabbat, then it would also be Mutter by Yom Tov. There is no differentiation in Mukse. The Ravid takes the Baal HaMor to task in defense of the Rif. The Ron, interestingly enough, upends the Baal HaMor's proof against the Rif and says maybe by Shabbat and Yom Kippur you can make that statement that whatever's Mutter on Shabbat is Mutter on Yom Kippur because they're Kedusha Achrat. They're on the same level. But by Shabbat and Yom Tov, we're on a different level, then you don't have to say whatever's Mutter on Shabbat is automatically Mutter on Yom Tov. Even though Yom Tov is more Kal, that's the exact reason why you do have Mukse. And therefore he says that maybe you could differentiate between the two, and the Baal HaMor's proof is not a good proof because of that. The Ramban also knocks on the Baal HaMor, but in the end comes around and basically says that he thinks that the Rif might not be right here, and that it might actually be that the earlier Poskim and the Gaonim seem to hold like Rabbi Shimon in both cases, that they pass like Rabbi Shimon across the board. What is the Psak Halacha? The Rif paskins Yom Tov like Rabbi Yehuda. The Rambam paskins Yom Tov like Rabbi Yehuda. Shulchan Aruch in that case is going to paskin that there is Mukse like Rabbi Yehuda on Yom Tov. The objecting individual is the Rosh, who are the three people that the Shulchan Aruch checks for it's for Psak Halacha. It's the Rosh, the Rif, and the Rambam. So the Rif and the Rambam are on one side here, so he doesn't paskin like the Rosh, but the Rosh does say that Rashi, the Ri, the Rabbeinu Tam, and many of the Gonim believe that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon and Yom Tov as well against the Rif. And he brings many proofs to that and reasons for why it is. And therefore the Rosh says that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon and Yom Tov as well. And that's how the Baal HaMor paskins. That's how the Tur Paskins, like his father, the Tur Paskins like his father, the Rosh, and the Roma brings down that opinion in Shulchan Aruch, in the Alachot Taf Tzadi Hey, in Hilchot Muksa, when it deals with Yom Tov over there. The Shulchan Aruch says that Muksa is a problem on Yom Tov. Along comes the Roma and says, V'yesh Matirim, that there is no Muksa on Yom Tov. And there's some who say that even though there's no Muksa, there's still a problem of Nolad. That Nolad still applies, and that has to do with the Machloket Rishonim and Gonim, as to whether Nolad has a different status than Muksa itself. We saw that at the beginning of Masechta as well. It goes back to Daf Bet again in the Masechta. And Tosafot clearly says that Nolad applies when it's a totally new creation. That's with regard to Yom Tov. Now, if we pass one like Rabbi Shimon, which we do, at least by Shabbat, Yom Tov, it's a Machloket. By Shabbat, we know there's Muksa. Every Shabbat, you have problems of Muksa. If we pass one like Rabbi Shimon, why is there Muksa? So that you have to deal with the question of Rabbi Shimon in our Gemara here. Rabbi said that even though Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold a muksa, he agrees by Gugaro to Vitzimukim. Well, that's also true. If you go to Masechet Shabbat, on Daf Memhei through Memzayin, there the Moraim are discussing within the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. Even though Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold a muksa, he holds Bachai's muksa. Even though he doesn't hold a muksa mius, he holds a Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold a muksa in the generic sense of muksa. He holds a muksa in the extreme cases. The question is, where is that line? And now Moraim said different lines for that, so do the Rishonim. Maybe you have a machloket about this. The Mishnah Berurah in the beginning of Shinchet, and the Aruch HaShulchan also in Siman Shinchet, the Aruch HaShulchan gives a good summary of this issue of where the exceptions to the rule are. The Mishnah Berurah in the beginning of Shinchet gives you the categories of muksa that apply. So even though we paskin like Rabbi Shimon, muksa applies to mius, so anything that is ma'us, it applies. Basis ledavar asur, Rabbi Shimon agrees, that's based on the Gemara in Shabbat that says that if you carry a ner, a lamp with a flame in it, you're not allowed to carry it around. The Gemara there concludes, according to Rava, that's because it's basis ledavar asur, according to Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon agrees with that. Bruga wrote, v'etzi mukim, is dichul beyadayim, that muksa applies. Kli shemlachto isur, very interesting. Kli shemlachto isur, we're matir by tzarech kufo and tzarech mekomo. But we don't permit chamal itself, which is just to protect the item, to take care of it, that we do not allow. So there, the poskim have to scramble, because where do we see that in Rabbi Shimon's Shita? That, Tosafot says, in the Gemara and Shabbat, Tosafot says that even Rabbi Shimon agrees that that's like Gugaro Vitzimukim. Chamal itself is the equivalent of Gugaro Vitzimukim, because Kli Shemachto Yisur, you're only going to take for Mekomo and Gufo, you don't think about those other areas, because it is a Kli Shemachto Yisur. So far we have Kli Shemachto Yisur, Mius, Basis L'davar Asur, we have Muksa Machmat Gufo, things that are inherently Muksa like stones. There Rabbi Shimon's going to agree. That's again interesting because that's not so clear. There it's less clear that it should be that way. And then Muksa Machmat Mitzvah also applies. That sometimes Muksa because of the Mitzvah that we learn in the Gemara Sukkah by the Atzei Sukkah, they become Muksa. And Muksa Machmat Pisarunkis, there we saw also that Rabbi Shimon agrees, everybody agrees there that it's Muksa, because that's like the Mishnah in Shabbat says, like there's certain items that are totally out of, because they're so expensive, nobody would touch them except for their designated purpose. And therefore, it's as if Dichlo B'Yadayim, because like the Shkita knife, or the Mila knife, there's certain things that are designated for solely for that purpose, and you wouldn't utilize them for anything else. That's equivalent of Dichlo B'Yadayim, because you wouldn't use them for anything else. So even though we pass them like Rabbi Shimon, nevertheless, there are certain Muksa that apply. And the question of whether you pass on like Rabbi Shimon in Yom Tov is subject to that machloket of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, which is really a derivative of the earlier machloket, what we say here, the Rif, the Rosh, and the other commentaries that speak about it. And with that, we'll end Masechet Beitzah.